WAPJ is now in its historic 20th year of providing quality programming to the Northwest Connecticut community. As part of preserving that history, we present a panel discussion featuring the talent of WAPJ broadcasters. In this panel, we are featuring the music broadcasters. In this panel are Miles Concannon. Miles, could you tell us the name of your program or any other programs you've done in WAPJ?
Sure. I'm the Mississippi Mudcat. I host Mudcat Blues on Tuesday nights from 9 to 11. I'm back with the station after I was off for a couple years. I took care of my brother down in Georgia. He had Huntington's disease, and that's one of the reasons why I'm on the radio. So I promote Huntington's disease twice an hour, actually. I play a PSA for Huntington's disease to make awareness of it. And I had shows earlier in my career here. I had Nashville Skyline on Monday nights, which was a country western show, country music. And Tuesday nights, it's a blues thing, regular blues program again.
Okay, and we're going to get back to some of the motivations of being part of a WAPJ broadcasting as we continue our discussion. Thank you. Also on the panel is Mark Allen Hart.
Yes, Mark Allen Hart. I did a show, I believe I started in 2013, and it was entitled Dance Tracks. I played EDM or electronic dance music. I played popular dance hits, some throwback disco, and some R&B and soul as well.
Very nice. Thank you.
I rejoined the station back in the early spring, and I do a show called Downbeat Now, which I feature the Giants of Jazz, classic period 1944 through 1965, and it's Sundays 7 to 9 p.m.
So a change of genres. We'll talk about that later on in our discussion. Also on the panel is Joel Benson.
Yeah, hi, I'm Joel Benson. I have a show called Unhinged. It goes on Thursdays from noon to 2. I guess I'm one of the younger members, not chronologically, but in terms of experience. I've been here just 3.5 years. Hard to believe how time flies. My show is Unhinged, like I said, and if I had to describe it, it's probably like a psychotic stream of consciousness. It's not locked into any one. It's kind of like what I woke up that day or remember from childhood as I was getting beaten, and there's always been music in the background. And I'd like to translate that into my show.
So the motivations and especially the names of your program and how that came to be, that'll be a part of our discussion as well as we continue on.
I'll be ready.
But also in our panel is Jacques Williams.
Good evening.
Jacques Williams, yes.
Yes, my name is Jacques Williams, and I host the Feel Good Show. My show airs 3 times a week. There's 3 different segments to the show. I'm on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 10 a.m. until noon. My Tuesday segment is entitled Two for Scooby Scooby Tuesday, which is an opportunity for our call-in audience to request their favorite artist. And they get to request 2 songs that they can hear back-to-back throughout the show. Wednesdays, we change the format to jazz, and we feature jazz musicians from any and every subgenre that we can come up with that's in our library. And then Thursdays, I have a talk show format. It's titled Local and Live, where we interview people from the community, businesses, venues, and artists who want to use our platform here at WAPJ to get the word out about their activities, events, and endeavors that they're embarking upon.
That's fantastic. And we'll talk about the different opportunities of sharing your voice and getting the voices of others out into the community as we continue on our panel discussion. But lastly, on this first segment, our first panel is Mike Roots.
Jay Timothy, thanks for having me on. I've been with the station since its inception. I hosted a show called Positive Vibrations, a reggae show. I still host a reggae show to this day. It's called Reggae Explorations as of several years ago. The name change came when the station moved here to Water Street. I also co-hosted a show at one time called The Jubilee Praise Hour with someone that got involved with the station and didn't have any experience, so I sat in with them and did that. So I been doing music for the whole life of the station, I guess.
The whole life of the station. Well, yeah. Thank you, gentlemen, for being a part of this panel, first panel discussion. Mike Roots, I'm going to throw the first question to you because you said that you were at the founding of the station itself. I know that the first song that was played on air was the national anthem. Beyond that, what was the first music that you recall that was played in those founding years?
I don't remember the first songs, the names of the songs, but
That's
it was
okay.
Adult standards.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Tony Bennett, Perry Como, Frank Sinatra, big band. That was the first bit of music that was played. Dave Sweet was the first one who went on the air, of course. He was the manager at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really his passion. And the music he enjoyed, and he did a really good job of presenting it as well.
What I noticed in this panel is that we have a wide variety of music. We have blues, EDM, and then jazz, some jazz as well, and along with community service and community outreach, the eclectic selections, which could also include some of the standards that first were aired on WAPJ, and reggae. So there is a wide variety of music already here at this table. What brought you to your particular brand of music that you want to share with others? I'm actually going to throw that out first to you, Miles, because you do blues, and you've done it a couple of times.
Yeah, well, it's the roots of rock and roll. You know, I forget who it was that said that rock and roll is the baby of the blues, right? I mean, let's face it. And some of the artists that I listened to when I grew up, like the Allman Brothers and bands like that, when I went back and researched, found out those guys weren't the originators of the songs. Those songs go back to the 30s, 40s, way deep. And it's just a genre that I got hooked on. And the musicians are tremendous. The blues guitarists, the acoustic guitars, the electric guitars. It's just that kind of genre. And when you get to the piano players, Pintar Perkins and guys like that, tremendous, tremendous. And that's what brought me to the blues, basically, yeah.
Yeah, and you, when you're describing it, you know, you can tell that there's a passion there, and also a huge knowledge base of knowing what you're talking about when it comes to that particular genre.
Yeah, well, that's how I came with the name Mississippi Mudcat, because they asked me when I first got here to do a country show, and everybody knows I was a hardcore rock and roller, Led Zeppelin, guys like that, The Who, and, you know, basically blues-based, you know, British blues-based. And they said, well, could you do country? And I'm there, oh, man. Well, yeah, I said, I'll spin polkas if you need somebody. I want to just get on the air. So they had Minnie. That was good. So I said, man, if I go on the air and I sound really dumb, Miles, how many Miles do you know in Torrington? I'm sure there's a few more than me, but a lot of people know me. And they kind of recognize my voice. I said, boy, if I sound stupid. So I said, well, I'll go on with a show called Nashville Skyline, and I'll be the Mississippi Mudcat. Now you won't know who I am, and if I sound terrible, that's fine, but I sounded pretty good, so it stuck.
Very nice. So using a pseudonym worked for you, and,
yeah.
And is that a good idea to have, do you think, for broadcasters who are starting out or even some who are...
Well, I think so, too, because the guy that really got me going to radio was, hey, it's the Wolfman, baby, Wolfman Jack. That hooked me.
And so we'll be back in just a few moments here on our discussion of WAPJ's history. Welcome back to our discussion of WAPJ's history here on our panel discussion of music. Now, Mark, you started with EDM, but then you switched to jazz. But obviously music is something that is important to you because you like to share it with the community. Tell me about that change of music choice.
So the change came about because Many years ago, I had discovered that I was attracted to jazz, certain things. I bought a double record set by the Crusaders. I bought a CD by John Coltrane, just happened to be Giant Steps, and it looked interesting to me. I didn't know anything about it whatsoever. And so I'm a rock guy as well. Grew up, I'm a self-described child of the 60s. You know, I sat there and I was 9 years old when the Beatles came on Ed Sullivan. And I learned how to play guitar. I was in garage bands. And I got into EDM for a little while. And that was through my daughter. I liked the music I heard her playing. And I didn't hear anything like that on the radio, especially not in Torrington. So I said, well, I'll bring it to the radio. I'm not afraid to do that. And I mixed in disco with it as well, because I come from that background as well. You know, the open shirt, the chains, the neon lights, you know, the whole thing. So, but now it's jazz. Now it's jazz, and I've immersed myself in it. And I'm really just fascinated the more I delve into it. And obviously, you can tell I'm just a music guy. I love, just love music. I listen to music all day long, mostly WAPJ. So I want to hear what the others are doing. And I'm really getting into all the instruments now. I know what I like and what I don't like. I don't care for Miles Davis trumpet with the mute on it. But I like it without. But I love saxophone. Incidentally, I have 2 years of saxophone training when I was in middle school that I should have kept up, and I never did. So that's what brought me to jazz, and I'm hoping to, you know, bring something into everyone's life every Sunday. And, you know, it's laid back on Sunday night. Just relax and enjoy some jazz.
Does the fact that you played music when you were younger, does that affect your choices now?
It absolutely does. And a lot of what I do, I go by ear, whether it's, you know, selecting a playlist, which I spend hours on every week. And it has to sound right to me. I have a good ear for what I think sounds good, for a good hook. And if I like it, I think my listeners are going to like it. So far, I've had some positive response, and I'm always reaching out and saying, if you don't like what I'm playing, please call and tell me. So I'm here to please you. It's a public radio station, right? Community radio, and I've gotten some good response, so I'm going with it.
But you got to put the phone back on the hook.
Yeah, right.
Now, Jacques, you are also a musician as well. Does being a musician help inform the choices, selection of the music that you play?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Well, I think you have to draw that line between what you personally like and what your audiences are going to like, because especially with the Feel Good Show, I'm more concerned with getting a response back from the listening audience that's impactful enough for them to call me. And either request something else or just comment on what I've played prior to that. My own personal taste in music and what I prefer to perform in live situations is vastly different than what my playlist is on the show.
Is that because what you play, you know, in live settings, it can be jazz to a certain degree, but it's not really jazz. You play some electronic. You've sang some standards. I've heard that as well. Bringing it back to the standards part of our discussion as well. So what you like to play as a musician is different, because what you're thinking for your audience is that you want to play the music that your audience wants to hear.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that I play for my audience, I couldn't touch with a 10-foot pole in a live performance. So I have to really understand my limitations as far as that's concerned. I don't think that, you know, I'm one that you'll be hearing doing songs from Slayer, for example. Nothing against Slayer.
Not that we are Slayer haters here.
Leave that up to Sal.
But Joel, do you think of your audience when you are selecting your music, or are you thinking of more of a personal journey?
Well, first, I'd like to say that I think Mark stole half of my show. I have a problem, but it's okay. It's a big universe out there, and I don't mind sharing.
Joel's malcontent.
My other problem is I come up after Jacques with his feel good, and I've got a soporific, stupid audience out there. So I really have to go with Afro-Cuban. Things like that to keep it going. All right,
we'll
I'm
put
sorry.
You behind Monk.
I mean,
no more introductions for you.
Bro. Thank you. All right. In terms of music, I mean, music's been my whole. I mean, it's always been in the background of you know of my life. There's a soundtrack, you know, always going on. When I was three, I had a Victrola. People remember what a Victrola was, right? Little record player. This way, my parents didn't have to deal with me. They could just buy me records. When I'd watch TV shows and movies, to me, the soundtrack was almost as important as what was going on. In the last season of Rin Tin Tin, they changed the opening music, and I was hysterical, you know. I kept screaming that it sounded like a circus, and I, you know, that kind of thing. All right. In terms of what I listened to, yeah. All right. I basically started off with rock and roll, mid-50s. I mean, even from like Earth Angel, which is like, what, 54, something like that. That carried me through until I was around 11, 12, and I kind of accidentally got into classical music. Not that I had to, you know, trade one for the other, but I got heavy into classical music, and later on in my life, I got into opera and all that stuff. So in high school, I got introduced to jazz, all right? Didn't know what jazz was. I once asked my mother what jazz meant, right? Seriously, and she said to me, it's anything other than rock and roll. So I guess Monteverdi would have been... a jazz star. In high school, in a 90% white high school, what did they play for jazz? They played Time Out. White Dave Brubeck. I'm serious. That is what I said. Wow, this is really something. And then eventually I started getting into jazz and all that stuff. The show is probably 60% jazz. What I like to play is stuff from the 20s, 30s, 40s, up to maybe the mid-60s. You agree with that? Back to the mid-60s. I don't like jazz that I can't understand, and I know it's my fault. It's not, you know, but if I can't really hum it, or if it goes on for 25 minutes, I'm, you know, I'm kind of lost.
So you have your own particular taste. You have, and you kind of want to share some of that taste, that eclectic taste, if you will, with your listening audience.
Yeah, so, I mean, so beyond that, I pepper that with I do play Afro-Cuban. I do play blues every so often. I mean, if I hear something that just sounds good, you know, why not? Why not? Why, you know, so...
Absolutely.
And I like to vary the genres within what I'm doing. And so, as Jacques will always say, you know, I can do, you know, craft work and then Carmen McRae. And who's to say that I, you know, that just because I have a Fabian album... that I have to play all 12 cuts, right? I like to go around and, you know, and just you know, sort the deck.
Well, let the record state there is no such law that requires all of Fabian to be played. I agree with that that point.
Mike, I miss Fabian.
Mike Roots, in terms of reggae, what brought you to reggae? And what brought you to the idea of sharing that reggae with others?
My interest in reggae started in my late teens. I was a student at Hartford State Technical College, which merged and was part of the merger a few years ago. It was part of now Capital Community Technical College. I remember being in the back of a friend's truck that he had a cap on the truck, and between classes when we had the time, we'd go back and read or take a nap or what have you. And I remember hearing WRTC, Trinity College Radio, and hearing what was called conscious reggae. And I was like, this is really... good stuff. It was very meaningful to me. Something interesting happened to me during that time period. I became a Christian. I became a follower of Christ. And I found that the music was very biblical. It was the music of Bob Marley. It was the music of Peter Tosh. It was the music of Inner Circle. All these classic, you know, reggae bands and artists were what was called conscious reggae. And it just struck a chord in me. And it spoke to issues that people were struggling with in society. And it was... I really found it was just like a magical experience almost. And so from there I began collecting music and eventually became involved with the station, eventually recorded music of my own.
So you're a musician as well?
I am. I am a musician. I was playing in garage rock bands in my late teens. I kind of got a late start with music and then got into reggae and have recorded some reggae music and have been able to network with a lot of artists, producers, and it's the rest is history in the making, I guess you could say.
So with your particular personal journey, you learned, you heard the music, you became a fan of that music, and then you learned how to play that music as well.
Right.
That's fantastic, because some people will learn to play the music and then
it's an interesting journey the way it came about. Yeah,
excellent. So we've got you're a musician, Jacques. You're a musician as well, and Mark, you're a musician. Miles, with your particular history, tell me about the love of rock and roll and growing up. What was your first memory of hearing something that knocked your socks off?
The Who. I can see for miles.
I see that.
Seriously, went out and bought the record the next day. The record store at the top of East Main Street. I could see for miles. I was hooked. The Who.
Were you dressed?
So yeah. Greatest thrill ever. I saw them at Madison Square Garden, all four of them, while they were all still alive back in 1974. The greatest concert I ever saw. Sat in the last row of the garden, but who cares? At least my ears weren't hurting.
Right.
They were loud enough.
And that was a seminal moment for you in terms of, you know, finding that particular music that resonated with you. Do you think that your audience gets that particular feeling? I mean, obviously, I get that feeling when I sit here at the table and I hear the passion that you bring to the music that you want to provide to the community. But do you think that for your audience who loves the particular music that you listen to, that they hear that one song and they discover it for the first time?
I think so.
You'd like to believe that.
I'd like to believe that, yeah, seriously.
I think that happens a lot at this station because there's so many DJs here that just have such a vast library of music. One of the things that I really appreciate about the station is the fact that the DJs have such a grasp of their genres that I often hear material that I haven't heard before, which makes me feel somewhat an amateur here. It's like, oh, I should know that song, but Chris Canfield, for example, I think his show is, I listen to the show and I'm like, because you think in your own sphere of, you know, musical, you know, influences that you've pretty much heard it all.
Yeah. I agree.
And after hearing his show, it's like, wow, there's a lot that I, you know. And another example was the Bean and Scheme show. The two girls that used to come on, they used to play some independent, you know, stuff that was just like, this is really, really good stuff. So not only do I have the, you know, opportunity and privilege to volunteer here at the station, but it also increases, you know, my musical knowledge to work with, you know, the DJs that have, you know, such depth of musical knowledge here. So that's a plus.
Well, you know, when we come back from our break, we're going to continue that particular discussion, talking about the things that we like about what other shows have brought to you and brought to your experience, and also the engagement that you have with your listening audience. So we'll be back in just a few moments here on our discussion of WAPJ's history. Welcome back to our discussion of WAPJ's history here on our panel discussion of music. Here with me is Mike Roots, Jacques Williams, Joel Benson, Mark Allen Hart, and Miles Concannon. We're talking about the different musical genres that are represented here at WAPJ. We have blues at this particular table. We have blues and reggae and jazz, EDM and jazz, and of course an eclectic mix that is found on the Unhinged program for Joel Benson. Now, talk to me about some engagement that you have with your audience. How do you get your feedback from your audience?
Mine's Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
I have a Mississippi Mudcat page and I have a Mudcat Blues page. And then friends, they just I don't take requests. I mean, I will take a request here and there if I can squeeze it in, because I pretty much got an idea of what I want to play for the show. And that way I don't want to be bothered and have to look it up. But a lot of times somebody will text me, and I'll get a text message in the afternoon. Hey, I just heard this song on Sirius Radio. Could you play this tonight? You know, I said, so that's how a lot of times I get my feedback is through social media.
And Mark, how about yourself?
So I don't do Facebook. Mm-hmm. I haven't for a while. There was so much venom during the political season that I decided to get out of that altogether. But I do have my own Twitter page, and I encourage requests through my Twitter handle. And I get one or two, mostly by phone, though. And it's interesting. You know, I'll get somebody to call me. They got a bonfire going. They just like what they're hearing.
Yeah.
You know, I hear that a lot. And I have to think, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I have to think that a lot of individuals are shy by nature, and they really like what they hear, but they won't call. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of that, more of that goes on than we realize.
So we've got phone calls as a means of contacting, also as other forms of social media, other ways of hearing from your audience?
My biggest feedback comes at Stop and Shop.
Stop and Shop?
Yes.
I just want to point out that Stop and Shop is not a sponsor of this particular program or of WABJ. Please continue.
Which aisle?
Well, usually it's the
produce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in all seriousness, what happens a lot, when I first started here at the station in 2011, the station at that particular time, as any type of operation, you have your ups and your downs. So after the new management took over the station, that's when I started to receive a little more feedback in regards to the overall perception of the station. People discovering for the first time that there was a station. Mm-hmm. So at the most unexpected times, I'll get someone that will come up and talk to me and say, hey, we were checking out the station, and it's not even necessarily all the time about my show. It's about other shows that might be checking out or asking questions about, you know, other DJs here and so on and so forth. So I think that overall the popularity of the station is growing, and I think that part of that has to be attributed to the new programming that we have, and the fact that there's less downtime between shows, and the downtime that we do have between shows is now filled with quality musical loops, so that people, once they tune in, there's really no reason to tune out. So I think, you know, having the management that we have here now and the focus that we have and, you know, the dedication of the staff, after a while, it's just people are going to take notice.
Do you, for reggae, is it the fact that, because it's such a specific genre, do you think that it helps that WAPJ also has a presence on the internet and that people can listen to it live? Do people find your show that way? Or do they mainly find it through listening through the FM dial?
Both. I get feedback from listeners through phone calls. I have, I would say, a pretty small circle of folks that call in. And then I have found I've picked up listeners by making my show available on demand, something that John Ramsey had suggested a couple of years ago. There was a website that I make use of that allows me to record my show here and upload it to the site. And those are archived shows each and every week, and there's a playlist to accompany each show. I've picked up a lot of listeners that way. In fact, I just received, I was talking to Mark, an email from a station manager of a station down in New Orleans that wants to pick up the show.
Wow.
He said he will cut out our underwriting and put theirs in. Would that be okay? You know, that sort of a thing. So I hear it from everywhere. And then, of course, the networking with the musicians and the producers of the music.
Mm-hmm.
So I get listeners in the UK, and I know people, and I've been over there, and I know people in the Caribbean. My wife is from there. I've met people I've networked with down there and that listen to the show. So it really is far-reaching, and there's no way, of course, of knowing who's listening. I think, as Mark said, you know, a lot of listeners, the most of them, won't call in, so you really don't know who's listening, but it really is nice to hear from listeners.
I understand. I'd like to stick a pin on the idea of having that interaction with people in that particular industry, because maybe others have that same type of experience. We'll be back in just a few moments here on our discussion of WAPJ's history. Welcome back to our discussion of WAPJ's history here on our panel discussion of music. I want to go back to Joel just for a second. How do you get your engagement with your audience or any feedback with your audience? Is it mainly through social media or?
No, I'm not. I'm like Mark. I'm not into social media. And every so often, I might get somebody calling saying they like something or can I play something. If my mother was alive, she'd probably call in, but I don't have that luxury. I don't know. I mean, you know, they haven't thrown pies at me. And I will say that what I thought was interesting is, like, you know, sometimes I like to write a couple little humorous things, which mm-hmm. are FCC approved, of course. And the idea that there is no feedback, and, you know, no audience feedback, that took a little getting used to, particularly, and I can translate it to music, because... A long time ago, when I listened to jazz stations, they would have shows where they play something, and then there would be 15 minutes of telling you every sideman and what happened to them and who they played for, and it would, like, you know, be crazy. So I never liked to get into other than this is who they are, and then this is a thing, and give my own personal feeling on stuff, right? Like, I'll, you know, aside from wow, or, you know, 13 minutes of sing, sing, sing with, you know, Benny Goodman and Gene Krupa. And then I'll say, like, listen to this for a minute. You know, I'll play a public service. I gotta come, you know, catch my breath, or, you know, or come down. So I try and show that there's something that I'm actually listening to what I'm playing.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing my nails between, for the music. You know, yeah. Spinning stuff. Mm. Yeah.
I take a little bit different tact to the songs when I play them. And while I'm hoping that I don't go on and that I'm not too verbose, because I know John encourages not to be, play more music, because that's what people want to hear. But they do want to hear anecdotes or important stories about the music, maybe, that you're playing. So once in a while, I'll feed some little tidbits. Wikipedia is great for that. And as I've been doing this jazz show, and I think I've always known this, but so music is... an evolution. So the jazz of the 20s begot, you know, right. Big bands, and the really good people in the big bands went off into jazz quartets, quintets, and so forth. And then out of that came rock and roll, with guys that would stand up in front with the sax and wail in the early 50s, only to be supplanted by somebody with electric guitar. It took it further than Wes Montgomery did, when he was just doing his finger picking in the background of a jazz track. So it's a gradual evolution if you look at the whole thing, and right up to today.
That's fantastic. I want to get to Miles, and I want to ask you real, because we started with you in this particular panel discussion, yeah. And I want to get back to you to so you could share with the audience the passion that you have for a particular issue, One of the driving forces of why you have the show to begin with, which was the Huntington's disease.
Yeah, Huntington's disease. And actually, I got lucky. I was looking for a new PSA because, like, I've been using Nora Guthrie's PSA since I've been on the air. 2001, I contacted HDSA, and they sent me a couple of recordings. Well, I contacted them again to see if they had anything new, and they didn't. So they sent along four scripts, a 30-second one, a 50-second one, a 45, you know. And I said to them, so I wrote back and I said, thank you. I said, I'll make a recording of one of these and I'll use it on my show. They emailed me back and said, could they listen to the recording? And I said, sure. And I sent it down to them and they're going to use it nationally.
Wow.
As a PSA for Huntington's disease.
That's powerful.
And I wasn't trying for that. I just was like wanting to bring awareness to it and, you know, it's like, I guess you step up to the plate first time in the majors and you hit a home run.
Well, your passion.
Kind of like that. Yeah, but it is my passion for it because, and I'm very good friends with the Guthrie family. Mm. I'm like this with the Guthries. They're a wonderful family. They have that Guthrie Center up at Great Barrington. Mm-hmm. I've been there many times. I help out on the walk every year. I'm the ice cream man. I hand out Ben and Jerry's. I'm the guy they want to see the most on that walk.
Yeah.
And we have a good time. And I know Abe and Kathy and Annie. And like I said, I'm going to see what they call themselves, the G-Babes. Arlo's daughters and Abe are playing in 2 weeks up at the Guthrie Center. So I'm looking forward to that. And it's a lot of fun. And that's my passion. And that's, like I said, trying to bring awareness to Huntington's disease and keeping the blues alive in Northwest Connecticut.
Wow, that's fantastic. Thank you. And that's taking your passion and then it's translating it and it's bringing it to a much wider audience. And now that's taking that to another level. Yeah. Nationally, people are going to be hearing that.
Yeah.
As we conclude our discussion, I want to ask each of you about your passions, about the passion that you want to bring to the music and the passion that you have for what you do at WAPJ. So, Mark, you have a passion for sharing your music. Is there any particular moment in your life that explains the passion that you have for the music that you have now?
I guess it would have to be High School Musical. I was in a High School Musical, The Unsinkable Molly Brown.
Sure.
And I had a fairly decent part where I sang in that. And I enjoyed being on stage, and that's one of the reasons I don't use a pseudonym, and that's because I'm still hoping to be discovered, and I want to get my Screen Actors Guild card, and I've gone for a few casting calls for extras.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to be in a movie, and I don't care if I'm an extra. So that's why I don't use a different name.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. So Unsinkable Molly Brown, your performance in that is something that helps inform you in terms of what you.
It does, and I was involved in the a cappella choir at Torrington. A cappella chorus, actually, it was called at Torrington High School, and our particular class went all state 2 years in a row. So,
wow, congratulations!
Yeah. So,
now, Joel, you are 3 years into WAPJ. What brought you to WAPJ? What was the thing? What was the catalyst that said, "Hey, WAPJ is the place I want to be"?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah. How long do I have?
Was Jack?
it was, you know, I live close to a competitive station, all right? So I pass it all the time. And then all of a sudden I said to myself, I can do this. I'm funny. I'm good looking. And I know a lot of music, right? So I go into this, this is true story. I go in and I said, I'd like to be on the air, all right? And they probably wanted to get rid of me, but they said, well, why don't you come and tell us what kind of show you think you would like to do? It'll be different. And I said, okay, I can do that. So I went home and I figured it out. And then I went back and I showed it to them. And they read it. And they thought that I would probably have them lose sponsors because they weren't ready for, you know. And I'm telling you, this is tame stuff. Mm-hmm. But they said, however... And you don't know how to do anything anyhow, which was totally true. So I said, however, you should come to this station in Torrington, and they run orientations, and they teach you. And I had an excellent teacher who kept me, 3 years before I went on because I had to learn some of the buttons. It was not as easy as I thought. My arms are short also. And that's how I got here. I mean, seriously, I got thrown out of a competitive thing. And I've never had any situations here. Well, maybe one, but that was really a long time ago.
But you were able to use this as an experience.
Absolutely. Learn and grow. Absolutely. It has become a serious part of my life.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So we'll be back in just a few moments here on our discussion of WAPJ's history. Welcome back to our discussion of WAPJ's history here on our panel discussion of music. Jacques, for you, it seems to me that you do have a passion of helping other people in communicating their message, because one of the through lines for what you do is that you go out into the community, whether it's on your cable show or whether it's on Feel Good Show, even on Thursdays, as a specific segment of saying, let me share this other person's message with my audience. So is it fair to say that that's a driving force for you?
Well, yes. I think the way I initially became involved with the station was I was invited by Barry to do a 5-minute call-in segment reporting on the activities from the Arts and Culture Commission, which I serve on. So that kind of turned into a situation where, you know, Barry was like, dude, why don't you just start a show? So at that particular time, I hadn't done any radio since I was in college. So I'm thinking to myself, it's been too long. Just exactly how is this going to happen? So one of the initiatives that we had from the Arts and Culture Commission was the Singer-Songwriter Network, where we formed the initiative to support, assist, and develop emerging and young artists. So I felt like here at the radio station, this could be an opportunity where we could work with local artists and bring them in and give them a platform to promote their music and share their music with the community and try to create a situation for them where they can network with other musicians and use WAPJ as a way to promote their projects. So yeah, I do have a passion for helping other artists, and I think that stems a lot from my experiences where I was growing up, and I had a lot of artists and musicians that helped me out, and that's how I eventually got to the East Coast and came to Connecticut, because actually toward the latter part of my time in my hometown is when they started suggesting to me, Jacques, you should probably think about spreading your wings and checking out bigger and better horizons, because at that particular time, the way the business was changing, it was imperative that I make a move. So now that I'm doing what I'm doing, I enjoy doing it, and I think that I'm best in a team situation where I can work with others and collaborate and share and hopefully have successes that can be mutually benefiting.
Absolutely, and the success of the Feel Good Show itself speaks for itself. 3 days a week providing information, entertainment, and music for the community is fantastic. Mike Roots, you've shared your conversion story with us, which is a very personal one for you, and how you used reggae music as a vessel to communicate that. Is there any particular song that you associate that is if perhaps the great song that if you had to choose the one song to play, this is your one song to play on reggae, that you would choose this particular song?
It's kind of hard to put my finger on one song.
Sure.
But I suppose if I were to be forced to pick something, it might be One Love, People Get Ready from Bob Marley and the Wailers.
I was just going to say
it's that. It's a classic song, but it actually borrows lyrics from Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
And he married the two together into a reggae beat. But, I mean, it's One Love, One Heart. Let's get together and feel all right. And let's give thanks and praise to the Lord and feel all right. I'm a true believer in the power of music to encourage, to inspire, to bring healing, to bring light into someone's darkness. And I love the stories of, I heard that, it doesn't have to have words, by the way, it can be jazz. And you get those occasional calls or emails. What was that song you played at about 20 after 3 mm-hmm. or whatever it is? It really spoke to me. Who was that? What was that? And I've had those experiences, and I think we all have at some point, where it's just really moving and touching. By the way, reggae isn't my only style of music I enjoy. Also jazz and world music.
Mm-hmm.
What really stirred me to get involved with WAPJ was something that had been kind of going before getting on the air, which was sharing music with cassettes back at the time. And I would sit in my living room in my early 20s, I think when I started with it, and with piles of CDs and cassettes, and make tapes and hand them out to people, just because when I found out somebody liked a particular style, or maybe somebody just needed a boost, or somebody was feeling down, I would just spend a lot of time doing it, probably more time than I don't have the time anymore. And this was just a very natural progression to just continue to do that in a greater platform, I think, to
absolutely
get on the air. And
if I could just add to that, I think Christofari, Taking in the Sun. I heard you play that, and it was just a wonderful. Music is such a visceral. It just moves you that way. It's a feeling. It's more than you're just hearing it. It goes right through you. It does to me anyway. And all different kinds of music. Whether it's jazz or reggae, or I love the blues. Being a guitar player, I love the blues. And I'd rather listen to music. I don't even turn on the TV.
Nor do I. All day.
You guys don't know what you're missing.
One of the things I find
General
thrilling,
Hospital.
And I did from the very beginning, and I still do, is the fact that I know you can hear songs on certain shows that you will not hear anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. And there are other local stations that have a cycle of songs that they play, and every now and then they'll insert a new one. But what we do is so different. I mean, they do what they do, and that's okay. But I just think it's really cool to hear songs that you don't hear other places.
That's probably the biggest comment that I hear, mm-hmm. is the fact that the diversity of the station is just unmatched anywhere else throughout the region.
Right. Well, I want to conclude this segment, this particular panel discussion, the quote that you just shared of the one love, one heart, let's get together and be all right. I feel like in a way, that's what WAPJ, this community of broadcasters, you do that. So I want to thank you for doing that, for sharing your passion with the listeners of Torrington and the community. I want to thank Mike Roots. I want to thank Jacques Williams. I want to thank Joel Benson. I want to thank Mark Allen Hart. I want to thank Miles Concannon for being part of this particular discussion of music broadcasters at WAPJ.
Thank you, JT.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a few moments on WAPJ. Welcome back to Nutmeg Chatter. I'm J. Timothy Quirk. Presented for you is the interview with John Ramsey, station manager of WAPJ. So could you tell me a little bit about the history of WAPJ?
Sure. The station was the brainchild of Attorney Sullivan and Dr. Temkin, two philanthropists and movers and shakers that had been active in Torrington for decades before 1990, when they thought over lunch, they decided that Torrington should have a radio station again. Originally, the city had two AM stations. Back in the 50s and 60s, there were WSNG and WLCR. WLCR went out of business in the 60s, leaving only one station in WSNG, which is still with us, but they were sold in the 80s to a station in Hartford, to Buckley Broadcasting. And they do a good job of broadcasting, but they're not local. The programming all originates out of Bloomfield on WSNG, and there's really not much of a connection with the community at all, which left Torrington without a local radio voice. And these two gentlemen thought that it would be important to have a radio station on in town again. They thought that originally in 1990, and it took them 7 years to convince the federal government, convince the FCC to get a station.
Wow. Now, taking 7 years to do anything shows that there is a huge commitment to the yes. idea and to the community. But obviously, they felt it was worth it, right?
They thought it was important, and it's probably... It's unique because it's probably one of the few times in the history of American broadcasting where a couple of people decided to put a radio station on, but they didn't have a specific idea what the programming should be. They weren't jazz lovers. They weren't classical buffs. They didn't want to bring opera to the community. They just wanted to bring good radio to the town. They didn't care. They thought there should be a community radio station and a community voice on the radio for Torrington and for greater Torrington, really. But they didn't. They had a vision of other people doing the programming. They didn't want to be on the air, and they didn't have any specific programming ideas, which is pretty cool, I think.
That's amazing. It's an idea of having a vision. Right?
Exactly. As opposed to doing something for yourself, because I'm a jazz buff and I want to play jazz on the radio. That wasn't the case. They just wanted to give back to the community. They had some money left over from another nonprofit project that they were doing, and it took them 7 years of fighting with the FCC because the FM dial is pretty crowded, and the FCC has a very archaic way of allocating frequencies. So it took them from 1990 to 1997 to get the FCC to finally allocate 89.9 for the Torrington community.
That's amazing. Now, and I'm going to talk about the other station on the dial that also carries WAPJ in just a few moments, but I want to stick with the history. So in 97, where was WAPJ located? I know it was in Torrington, but where specifically?
Originally, the plan was to put it in the new Torrington High School, which was being built in the mid-90s, but it took so long to get the station licensed, the space was not available anymore. So they were stuck. Dr. Temkin and Mr. Sullivan had the radio station license, but no place to put it. So the Litchfield County Commission on Higher Education, which was a booster organization to help UConn Torrington, was able to work out an arrangement to put the station at Torrington's UConn branch.
Really? So it was there first at the UConn branch. And how long was it there, John?
It was there for 3 or 4 years, and it was an ideal situation in the sense that the space was provided to us for free because, among other things, the station promoted UConn and what UConn was doing. UConn has always been good at tying in with the community and helping the community. And the facilities were really nice. They actually had that tower. They've got that huge radio tower behind the campus,
sure.
which tied in perfectly. The downside was, and a lot of professors and other people involved with UConn were on the air, so it was a great give and take. The downside was the school's campus was only open from about 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the evening, never in the evening, never on weekends. And trying to run a volunteer organization with no weekend and no evening coverage, which is when most volunteers are available,
sure.
it was a challenge.
That makes sense. And so they had to find a different venue. Where did they go next?
They went to they stayed at UConn until UConn needed the space. This UConn was growing in the early 2000s. So in 2002, I believe, they moved to the Nutmeg Ballet. Nutmeg was just undergoing a renovation, and space was provided in the basement with two really nice studios and an office for the radio station to exist there. And they were there for 3 or 4 years. And then the Nutmeg needed the space. And we moved over here to 40 Water Street, which is the building owned by the Temkin family. Dr. Temkin's dental practice was upstairs until a few years ago, and here we remain.
And just as a special programming note, it should be noted that the Nutmeg Ballet Conservatory is a sponsor of WAPJ programming. As we continue the discussion, so you have now moved to Water Street. How long have you been here in Water Street?
Since 2005. And it's an ideal location. You know, it's a great neighborhood. We're right It's a very busy street, which sometimes the listeners can hear noise of fire trucks going by in the background because the firehouse is right up the road. But we've got a storefront studio. Stations back in the 50s and 60s used to be in parkades and in shopping centers, but that's all long gone away now because stations are all corporate owned and they're in big glass towers in Hartford and New Haven. But we're right here. People can literally walk by and look in while we're doing shows.
That's one of the most, one of my favorite things about WAPJ is to be able to drive on at any time on Water Street, and when there's a show on and there's a live person here, you can look in, you can see them, you can turn on your radio dial to that while you're in the car, and you can see them put on their show. And I think that's great. I really love that part of the community atmosphere. Do you think that helps being physically located in town where somebody can literally walk by?
Yeah, it really ties us in with the community. It gives us visibility, but it also gives the listener accessibility. It's not unusual for somebody to stop by and donate a CD, donate some cash, or bring in a lost dog or lost cat announcement, which we'll put on the air.
That's amazing, and you do put on so many announcements here for on WAPJ, which is community radio. That's some of the history behind WAPJ. We have been talking about WAPJ community radio. And now, John, I'd like to talk to you about your involvement in WAPJ. How did you first get involved?
Well, I got involved with the radio station in 1996, about a year before the station went on the air, when Dr. Temkin, through a mutual friend, I found out that Dr. Temkin, one of the station founders, had this license from the FCC to build a station, and that they had the equipment and the facilities, the space at UConn, but they didn't have anybody that knew how to build a radio station. And I'm a broadcast engineer by trade, so I met with Dr. Temkin and kind of fell in love with the concept and really embraced him as a philanthropist, really got to know him and all the wonderful things he and his family had done for the community. So I volunteered on a pro bono basis to build the radio station for him.
How has radio changed, would you say, in the past, let's say, 5 years?
5 years, we haven't seen as many big changes as the last 10 or 15 years.
Okay.
I mean, back 10 or 15 years ago, they deregulated radio dramatically through a change in the Communications Act. Prior to, I think, 1998, a person or a business couldn't own more than 12 AM, 12 FM, and 12 TV stations. That was a lot, and not many people owned that many. They deregulated that you can own an unlimited number of radio and television stations, but they limited how many you could own in each town. So you ended up having companies like CBS Radio and iHeart owning hundreds, or in the case of iHeart, 1,000 radio stations. And that resulted in the kind of demise of local radio, because there's an economy of scale. All McDonald's are pretty much the same because they save money. They don't have specific menus. They all look the same. They have the same seats, the same cash registers, because that's the way you save money by doing things in a large scale. When you do that with radio, the programming suffers, I think.
And so that's why you're interested in community radio, because there's such a wide variety.
I mean, the two things that people say they want from radio historically, in surveys going back decades and in surveys as recently as months ago, they want localism and they want companionship. And when you put those two things together, if you have a live person on the radio as opposed to an automated system that is, things are recorded in advance, when you've got somebody doing radio live from the local community, you're fulfilling both needs, and people like that.
We're talking with John Ramsey here at WAPJ Radio. Thank you for listening to Nutmeg Chatter, the radio program with J. Timothy Quirk. I want to thank my guest, John Ramsey, and I want to thank you for listening. Some of the music has been provided by the Jingle Punks, courtesy of YouTube royalty-free music. Find Nutmeg Chatter on Facebook and give us a like. Also, check out nutmegchatter.com. Please enjoy some more quality programming on WAPJ, Torrington Community Radio.